Welcome to Catalyst for Government's Big Data Revolution panel, sponsored by NetApp and CDWG. Here's your host, Tom Tenney.
Thank you for joining us and welcome to the program. Our guests today are Terry Halverson, the CIO of the Department of the Navy, Lee Vorthman, the Chief Technology Officer for Federal Civilian Agencies at NetApp U.S. Public Sector, David Bray, the CIO of the Federal Communications Commission, thank you, Jack Nichols, the Solutions Architect at CDWG, and John Montell, the Electronic Records Manager in the Office of the CIO at the Interior Department. It's great to have you all. And of course, all of the big data discussions that we've had up until now tend to concentrate on the tools for mining information out of big data. Today, we're going to talk about the back end of all of this, the kinds of data centers, networks, and virtualization, and all these technologies, storage required to serve up big data, make sure that the government can handle it properly. So I thought a good place to start would be asking our government guests today what your data center optimization strategy is, what you're doing with data centers in support of big data and other modern IT initiatives. And maybe consolidation might be part of it, but really we want to concentrate on optimizing more than consolidating. Why don't we start with the Navy Department with Terry Halverson?
Okay. Well, the first thing I would talk about is optimization to me right now is focused on cost savings. So I am not as focused on consolidating or closing data centers, but in saving the money with the data centers. Now, there is a relationship between closing and savings, but it's not one for one. And the second part of your question, I think, gets to a little bit, what are we doing on our optimization plan? What technologies are we using? Well, the Department of Navy is big enough that I can actually tell you we're going to use all of them. Whatever blend of technologies work best to get our mission sets done at the best cost. That means we're going to increase virtualization. We're doing that now. We're at about 41% across the DON for virtualization. Our goal is to be 80% here by the end of the fit-up. I think we'll make that. We're also looking at the types of data centers. Lots of breakthroughs in technology there. The new pod data centers, a lot less dependent on environmental factors. So you don't need raised floor. You can put them on a concrete slab. You can put them out in the weather. And some places, that's an ideal solution. Some cases, we still have to worry about, because of the way our applications are configured, latency is a problem, so that's still going to mean that we want the data and the data center close to the user. But where we have a lot of those, trying to consolidate those in key places, for me, that means fleet concentration areas, Norfolk, San Diego. We are going to do some forklift. Forklift meaning you just pick up the data and you put it in a new place because it saves more money in the new location. But they'll always almost have a second and third effect where once you get the data there, what are you doing to optimize the data? And I would tell you, I don't see much of a difference in my overall data center data strategy for big data, little data. It's still how do you optimize it in the right storage locations, the right price. The other thing that we are doing inside the DON is we want to get between 70-75% of our data stored in some version of a commercial environment. And that could mean, you know, in a commercial facility, completely public cloud. Some of you are aware we've signed an agreement with Amazon. Our public-facing websites are on Amazon. To using, we are a partner with HP. They want our NGEN contract. That's part of our commercial solution. It could go all the way out where we may say, hey, let's lease some space in the government for somebody to come in and optimize and run a data center for us. To doing private solutions with companies. But we do believe that for our NIPRNet environment, the unclassified environment, getting about 75% of that into some set of commercial solutions probably meets mission at the best value for us. I mean, we're seeing anywhere from 66% to 20% savings as we move into the different variations of commercial.
All right, a lot going on. And Dave Bray at FCC, I think from a standpoint of technology, the agency is almost unrecognizable from, say, 5 years ago, at least from the public-facing websites. What's going on behind the scenes to support all of that?
Well, it's interesting you say that. So I've been at the FCC now for about 6 months, and I often say that being a new CIO is like buying a used car, driving it off the lot, and then looking at the engine and saying, what did I actually buy? The FCC actually has 207 different IT systems, and this is for an agency that's only 1,754 people. So it's essentially one system for every nine people that we have. The systems themselves behind the scenes, more than 40%, and this was 2 years ago, are more than 10 years old. And so so I think the big thing that we're looking with data and data centers is really just trying to extract from those legacy systems data in a usable form where we can actually build a big table across that. And so that, you know, we have multiple licensing systems. If you are a Verizon or AT&T, you don't have to log on to several different systems that we have that are public-facing.
The chairman, Tom Wheeler, recently made an impassioned plea to appropriators to help us modernize the infrastructure.
Yes. The good news is he also has come on board recently, and so the timing has been well where we now have an IT-savvy chairman that comes from venture capital, and he's looked at our infrastructure, and basically the assessment is, we will spend more maintaining the legacy infrastructure over 2 years than we would if we were actually modernized what we need to do. And so while we are trying to focus on cost savings, it really is really just trying to do cost savings in terms of doing the O&M to maintain what we have. There's a lot of nested procedures, a lot of stored procedures in our data. It's not in a good usable form. I would actually say our website also, that's one of the things that actually we do get from both our partners and our staffers, could be improved. And so we're really embarking on a modernization journey with what we're doing. And with that, trying to think about how can we make the data the FCC has both more usable to folks within the FCC, but even more importantly, more usable to our partners as well as citizens. We did launch, since I arrived, we launched the FCC Speed Test app, which is an example of where we want to go. So the Speed Test app is available on iOS as well as the Google Play Store. It was the number 4 app on iOS, which I think is a first for a government agency. And what it is the code is open source. You can take a look at it. If you download it and choose to consent to the terms, 3 times a day, it collects your broadband connection speed and anonymously shares that with a third party that then shares it with the FCC, which we then share back with the public. So you can actually visualize by provider, by connection speed, the first sort of real-time crowdsource map of connection speed across the FCC. So that's sort of the model where we want to go, because again, we're small. I mean, compared to Navy and other agencies, we're only 1,700 people. So how can we engage the public to help do some of the things that we do?
And by the way, my own house is on the FCC program for collecting information on wired connections. I have the Ask Sam report every month. I'm wondering how long they need to keep taking it, because the speeds are the same for a couple of years. But do you have a 2B model for what you would like the infrastructure to look like at this point?
Yes, the 2B division that we have, and that's assuming that we get the funds that we need to do modernization, is that we actually have a single data mart for the 207 different systems. It's now pulling it in. That data mart is then allowing us to both make the data accessible to people within the FCC, but we also are doing the appropriate open APIs so it's available to our partners as well as to the public. There's the ability to remix it on the website itself, but then if you want to download it and do some things with yourself, you can do that as well. We do know that there's a lot of interest in terms of the data that the FCC is receiving. I really think the vision that the chairman would like to have and that we'd like to have as well is that we become a brokerage of data and a trusted provider of data at the FCC.
Okay, good. And John, Interior has made a lot of progress too. Tell us the state of the art now for your data centers, data infrastructure, and where you're like to be heading over the next couple of years.
Yeah, so the Department of Interior, as you know, started in 2010 in its IT transformation initiative. With 300 plus data centers across the United States, we've really identified 6 core data centers that we want to standardize on. We recently awarded an IDIQ. It was a GWAC for cloud hosting, so that we can begin to consolidate all these. And right now we're at about 40% consolidation, and I think the goal is by 2020 to at least get them all into these 6 data centers, and then leverage this GWAC that we've invested in to provide services where applicable and centralize our data. We're leveraging a lot of standards. We're leveraging NEEM. We're leveraging Cloud First. We're leveraging cross-data pollination through multiple systems, not only records, which is my area in information governance, but geospatial mapping, services that support VTL and other areas that we need to take to the next level and begin to realize some of the data savings inside this IT transformation initiative.
Okay, and we're going to turn to industry now, and I wanted to start with Jack Nichols from CDWG. The question I always like to ask people like you and in positions like yours is, what do you see when you look across government? Because you've got a view across many agencies. What's the status of data centers, and do they look pretty modern now, or is there a way to go?
Well, I think there's a way to go, certainly, and I think there's a mix of what you see. So some are further ahead than others, certainly. But I see, across the board, really everybody striving to get to to where folks like Mr. Halverson and John and the DOI have really done some trailblazing kinds of efforts and are trying to follow in those footsteps. So I think that's a very good sign. But varying states of virtualization and data center consolidation, but for the most part, everybody trying to do the right thing.
So they're working there. And Lee, of course, you're in the appliance and stuff business. And is the equipment that is in the average data center now, do you think, optimal for what people are trying to do? We've heard a lot of efforts to try to optimize and support missions, ultimately. But do they have what they need in there?
I think for the most part, they probably do. There are some interesting trends that are emerging where I think the agencies can start to take advantage of these new technologies that can help out, right? So there's things like when you're talking about going to converged infrastructure or cloud, how do you make sure that your overall infrastructure has the resources that you need, and that may require modernization or upgrading. There's also trends where, as you begin to federate these, resources across a giant single infrastructure, you have to look at, okay, how are we going to get the performance out of that? How are we going to make sure people get the resources? And things like virtualization, things like flash performance pools that give you the resources you need on demand, all of those type of technologies are going to become more important. And those are technologies that have recently emerged into the mainstream, I'd say, in the last year to 18 months. And most agencies are, again, as we've heard, are struggling with where's the right place to put these and how can we do that most effectively?
Okay, let's talk about data itself for a minute. And we've heard the idea of consolidating data in large marts. We've also talked about data as data, whether it's big data or operational data. Terry, I wanted to ask you, is there a specific big data strategy or area of the Navy, or is all data looked at the same and it's just available to applications? I mean, how do you look at data in the context of that big data word?
Yeah, and I keep repeating my answer here, but the answer for us is yes, there's a data strategy. Yes, there's a big data strategy. I mean, if we looked at the Navy as where it stands in the Fortune 500, on any given day, we're Fortune 3 or 4. We are, in fact, a coalition of multiple companies and multiple businesses. So much like some of the other big communities, so we have the national intelligence community. We're part of that. We have a big data strategy for the national intelligence community. How do you move that data? How do you make it accessible faster? And more importantly, how do you get to the analysis of data faster? I mean, I would tell you that part of our big data problem isn't having data. We actually have lots and lots and lots of data. Having spent some time operational, my biggest problem was never having too much data. It was having too little intelligence. So how do we fix that? So looking at some of the new technology and tools in that area is certainly something we're doing. How do you get to the analysis? How can you automate more analysis? That's even true on the business side. That means you have to have a much better understanding of your business processes. So the other part that I would say, when you're going to do big data, you also have to do big processes. And that means you have to go look at your processes. And, one of the myths used to be, you never let IT drive your process. Well, the bigger thing, I think, is never say never. There are certain times when you're looking across big enterprises where you absolutely want to say, you know what, this is the best IT practice. You need to change your process to fit that so that we optimize and save the money. That's not always true, and you want to blend that. But to say, well, you're always going to let the business process drive the IT, not the answer anymore, particularly with some of the new technologies. We have some business areas. We have an ERP system in the Navy. I'm not going to tell you we are getting our full use out of it. We're not. We're looking at how we do that. Part of the answer is how do you take that across all of the business lanes that we have, and they are different. And different businesses use and look at data differently. How do you merge that? How do you standardize, frankly, down to the data element level that says this is the same element and same shared data that I need across all businesses? Here's the ones that are slightly different for these connected but different businesses. So in addition to what I would call the business process, we have to understand the data better. And that's everything from the structure of the data, the value of the data. How do you do shared data elements? How do you collapse the number of authoritative data sources? I mean, interesting, and we still have this problem. We've done some good work, but I will have maybe three authoritative sources for the same data element. That's not a good plan. So getting down and doing the data analysis, that's probably the longest pole in our tent, too, is to get and understand our structure enough to get down to where we have the data element in a single place it needs to be, and then can share out and reach to all of the systems and apps that
so
need to use it.
So you're duplicating all
correct.
Over the world also, too.
That's correct.
A big issue, too, for storage and infrastructure.
Right.
And John, you mentioned that Interior, you're responsible in the records area, but there's also mapping data and so forth. There's a, what I heard was a diversity of data types. How do you get those all together? I mean, what kind of a database can you put that all in?
Yeah, so we're taking some very initial steps, preliminary steps. We have a lot of applications, a lot of data, and a lot of historically non-structured data, just simply due to the diversity of the agency. We've adopted, if you remember, the M1313 initiative, the OMB directive that came out on open standards. We're leveraging NEAM, XML, and XMLT, and we're trying to design from the core up a common data language that we can, as we migrate all of these technologies into our hosting environments and start to move things into the cloud, that we can better define single layers of identity across multiple applications so that we don't have to develop interconnected applications to cross-pollinate data. And the result is that we want to, and leveraging on what Terry said, that we want to leverage all of this data to better understand how we communicate internally and build metrics that we can then look at our business processes and understand the reason why. I think it's more it goes well beyond that of simply consolidating and moving all this data into the cloud. We have to better understand why we communicate the way we do to leverage that ROI.
All right, we're going to take a short break on that note. Our guests today are Terry Halverson, the CIO of the Navy Department, John Montell, Electronics Records Manager in the Office of the CIO at the Interior Department, David Bray, CIO of the Federal Communications Commission, Jack Nichols, Solution Architect at CDWG, and Lee Vorthman, the Chief Technology Officer for Federal Civilian Agencies at NetApp, U.S. Public Sector. I'm your moderator, Tom Temin, on the Catalyst for Government's Big Data Revolution. This panel discussion sponsored by NetApp and CDWG here on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
What does all the buzz about big data mean for federal agencies? It means your agency can gain insight with analytics for large data sets, go fast with bandwidth that supports data-intensive workloads, and keep all your content with secure, boundless data storage. That's what you can do with an effective big data solution, but it's only from CDWG and NetApp. To learn how to turn your data challenges into data-driven insight, visit cdwg.com/netapp. That's cdwg.com/netapp.
And welcome back to our panel discussion, The Catalyst for the Government's Big Data Revolution, sponsored by NetApp and CDWG here on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Our guests today are Lee Vorthman, the Chief Technology Officer for Federal Civilian Agencies at NetApp U.S. Public Sector, Jack Nichols, Solutions Architect at CDWG, David Bray, the CIO of the Federal Communications Commission, John Montell, Electronic Records Manager in the Office of the CIO at the Interior Department, and Terry Halverson, the CIO of the Department of the Navy. And David Bray, I wanted to ask you the first question regarding applications, because the application strategy of an agency backs up to the way the data centers and infrastructure are architected to serve up data to those applications. So give us an idea of what your overall application strategy looks like. We can talk about mobility there also, which is kind of an FCC mission as well as an FCC strategy for its own purposes. So tell us what's going on there.
That's a great question, Tom. So since arriving at the FCC, used the first 6 months to do a survey of what did we have due to listening and learning tour. And again, it was clear that we had had applications that had basically minimal investment over the last 8 or 9 years. In fact, there are some that have not been getting any tenure and loving care for more than 10 years.
A lot of Windows 95 still around.
Fortunately,
there.
Fortunately, the good news is since then, we're only at 3% XP. So that was one of the first things when I arrived that we quickly, we've gone to Windows 7. The bigger thing is we have a lot of Power Builder. Fortunately, no COBOL or anything like that, but we do have Power Builder. We have probably some Borland Paradox too. So
you're an archaeologist.
Yes. The FCC is in, and so I often think that what we're doing is less of a revolution and more is just modernization of the FCC. And the theory I have is organizations always do great on the front end what they may sometimes neglect on the inside. So we do now have a chairman that actually gets it, and we're making the movement. Our application strategy, because the FCC has to deal with a lot of policy-related activities, and oftentimes there's a need for evidence-based policy, is what can we do to make the data in our applications as agile as possible so that when a commissioner asks a question or when we're going to have a commission hearing, it could be that we have less than 48 hours to actually do all the analysis that we need to do to actually then present that data. And so we're fond of tools like MongoDB, other sort of agile tools that allow us to quickly make the analyses and then present that. And so that's what we're doing on the in-house. And the nice thing about the commission is we do have an op tempo where every month we do have to have a public hearing. We have to get the agenda out in advance. And so we want to move to evidence-based policy that we're doing with our data. On the outside, the FCC website still has many different subdomains. We still have some subdomains that look like, quite frankly, they were built in Front Page 98, and they may have been. Trying to have use data analytics as well as focus groups identify the most used parts of the website, both the old and the new, and then have that go forward. We should have a responsive website. After all, we are the FCC. It should look good on a tablet. Should look good on a phone. And also, for everything that we do, wherever possible, have an open API that people can pull from. And so it's not just that FCC is making its data use to itself, but then people can pull from it. And it may be in the future, it's actually a two-way street. We may work with our partners and they may have data. They already submit data manually for licenses. One of the things that absolutely blew my mind is the FCC is still using paper-based complaint forms. And you would think that, again, we could probably move to the 20th century and use web-based and maybe go even further with web-based. And so I think our cost savings with both data and applications, when I get asked this question, will come from making non-IT processes that are very inefficient right now and very unproductive, making them much more productive. And what I look for is whenever we engage in an effort is please show me the as-is process and desire to be, and then we'll figure out the IT that goes on top of that.
And what about mobility? Because you mentioned the APIs, and those are really important to mobile apps, which
yes.
tend to be agnostic of the data that they're pulling from because they combine things in new ways. So is there a mobility overlay here?
Yes.
Coming?
In fact, mobile is key to our strategy. We're looking at our field offices having mobile apps that they could use for their purposes and actually have a secure kernel. We're also looking at mobile apps, you mentioned the FCC speed test app, as a way of engaging the public that if they choose to be, they can actually provide data that actually talks about their connection speed to actually do that evidence-based policy. And we like the agnostic nature of apps. Because, again, it may be that we're sharing the data with the public or the public sharing data with us. It can actually be a two-way street. I'm a firm believer that now that the Internet is becoming more accessible and more ubiquitous, we can do things that historically had to be done by D.C. or had to be done by government can now be this broader definition of the public sector can do it, and whether it's citizens or public-private partnerships, there are things that we used to do in government that we can now actually engage others in doing.
Okay, and Jack, I wanted to ask you from CDWG's standpoint as a company that's supporting a lot of mobility efforts commercially and in the government, are there things that agencies can do to jumpstart their way to get toward a more mobility strategy without years and years of effort?
Sure. I think it's a great question, Tom. And I think one of the first steps is really to assess your environment. And that's probably the most important thing, is that really gives you some sense of direction as to what's possible in your particular environment as it relates to your users, your technology, your applications. And, in my mind, that's always a great first step. From there, we can look at what's possible from a technology standpoint. You know, Lee mentioned earlier some newer emerging technologies, and all those things can come to bear once you have that. But really, an assessment is probably the very key first step to finding out, getting the foundation for what direction you want to go.
And so that assessment would also look at APIs and data sources and making sure they're mobile ready, I guess.
Absolutely. So everything from the very basic infrastructure to the APIs and the applications in use.
Okay. And Terry, of course, the Navy is mobile in the sense forever. It's had things, platforms that go places. And I guess mobile communications used to be flag waving at one point. Now it's a little more sophisticated in the Navy. But tell us about application strategy and also how mobility might be affecting that and how it backs up to the data.
Yes, Tom, I'm going to talk about that. So first of all, I don't have an application strategy. I have an overall data strategy. And I think if you're not thinking that way, you're going to miss the boat. Certainly applications drive the use for the demand signal for users. They're using apps. They're using systems. But you still have to go back to ask yourself some basic questions. And one of the basic questions is, what apps have to be mobile? Which really you're asking, what data has to be mobile? Not all data has to be mobile. Not all data should be mobile in the environment. You also have to take a look from our standpoint today. I have a list of things I want to make more mobile. What's the priority on that list? Because I'll tell you, the question that takes most of my time today, what am I not going to spend money on? This is a different DOD posture than say 5-6 years ago. We are really focused on what not to spend money on. So that means you have to make different priority decisions. So what are my mission requirements that drive my data requirements to say this has to go mobile? Where are my apps that are okay? I mean, I always don't want to be on the leading edge. I mean, we talked a little bit about COBOL. I have apps that are in COBOL, and I'm quite happy with them. Matter of fact, lots of business have apps that are in COBOL. Big, large processing for personnel, finance. Most industries still are around COBOL. It's not the same COBOL that I learned to program on, thank God, but it is. It's modernized. And that's going to last a while, and that's fine. There are other apps that are in that. No, it's not so fine. And we need to, again, watch the data value that's driving me. And data value, I think, is a topic we don't spend enough time on. What's the value of the data? And I think one of the things we're finding is, frankly, we have some data that doesn't have much value. It doesn't need to be mobile. It doesn't need to be anywhere. We need to go and eliminate the data. That's going to drive us to eliminating some apps. We have more apps than we need in the Navy. I think we've made a big push, Department Navy-wide, to get reduced apps. We're probably down to under 6,000. That's still too many.
I mean, the way you describe this is the opposite of how it's usually described. Yeah. I remember early in the 90s and early 2000s, the whole idea was getting rid of applications, but you're looking at it from getting rid of data.
I think you have to, because people built applications. I mean, we can look at applications. Some people would say, oh, that application was done. Somebody built that for a reason. Most of it was the reason they wanted to get access to some element of data.
Even though that ship might have been scrapped 30 years ago, the app's still there.
But remember, the data that it was supporting is probably still around. Mm-hmm. I mean, that we built apps to get to data, manipulate data, get to solution sets. So the requirement for that app may not have gone away. The reason how that app works may have gone away, but we don't know that until we ask the question about the value of the data. Are there some data pieces we don't need? Right. And if we get that list, then you can start looking, well, look, all these apps had this big data that we didn't need. So can we now say, okay, if I've got 60, 70% of the data not needed that app was manipulating or the way it manipulating is wrong, then that's an app to target to kill. And just get rid of it and move on. But the other piece of that I think you have to be willing to do, and I said that earlier, is you're probably going to have to get an enterprise behavior that says, you know what, today, in our initial move, we're going to move some apps, we're going to collapse it, and that app, our new set of apps and systems, or the new way we get to your data, initially may answer 85% of your requirement, 80% of your requirement. You're going to have to live with that for a while. As we move to the 100%, as it takes us time to prioritize the funding. And that's, you heard some of the other partners say, that is a cultural change. It's a cultural change about who owns the data. And frankly, it's a cultural change about how we're going to use the data. And that is a big element of any change. So there's a cultural issue to all this, because you're now trying to treat the data more at the true enterprise level than at each of, in my case, say, the sub-company or sub-corporation level.
So would it be too far to say that maybe you should almost never destroy data, but maybe just store it in a way that it's there if you need it someday? Because, as you said, originally it was needed for something.
Yeah, I think what you do is you initially move the data that you find it low relevancy for, low value for, into a cheaper, you know, in many cases, offline storage. Do your further analysis, and you'll find some data that you can absolutely just, you know, electronically kill. But you do need to be careful. And, of course, in the federal government and within DOD, the requirements about what data you must store, your records requirements, are a little bit more rigorous than, say, what's in the public sector. So it will take you a little more analysis to decide what to kill. So park it in a box somewhere that's the cheapest way you can find to store it. Do that further analysis, but get it off your systems.
All right, so Lee, you might be a good one to follow up that question with a question about storage hierarchy. That's always been an issue for people in charge of managing data, is how do you store it so that you can get it when you need to, but not pay for right there kind of data, or there's not enough memory in the world for that. So what are the up-to-date strategies for managing data in a way that Terry just described?
Sure. Well, so first I want to say I think Terry and I are going to become fast friends, because we have similar views on the data world in terms of making sure we classify it to get the best use out of it. But in terms of storing it, right, if we go back to kind of the first segment where we talked about, you know, data center modernization and consolidation, and certainly the trends around virtualization, we're seeing the demand for once you classify your data and figure out your use cases, for trying to put it into this, if you will, federated pool, and that's really going to give you the most cost savings and most optimization out of the data. And what that does for you is, you know, so for example, in Terry's case, it lets you move the data where you need it to be non-disruptively. It lets you put it into certain, you know, performance pools or long-term archive pools. You know, the government obviously has very strict requirements for how long they need to keep their data. So it gives you this flexibility as we talk about virtualizing the technology more and more, software-defined X, right? It gives you this flexibility to move that data into the tiers that you need it to be in.
And also, aren't there there's different options now for physical storage media than
Absolutely.
There were, say, 10 or 12 years ago?
Yeah, so obviously, you know, the densities of storage are going up, so you now have the option to have very, very long long-term archives on the floor of your data centers. You also have solid state that's now in the mainstream, right? So you have the option for very, very high-performance flash technologies. You have virtualized versions of storage instances, if you will. When we talk about cloud, how can you get the best data to where you need it to be? So there's a lot of options out there, and you know, certainly our customers, as we heard, are trying to figure out how they can best take advantage of it.
All right, John, and when I see Interior Department, I see a bundle of really sub-agencies and missions,
yeah.
And they're geographically scattered. So how do you reconcile all that from an application standpoint and from a data standpoint?
Yeah, one of the initiatives that we started in 2012 was to consolidate all of the records in the department. So we're working to consolidate about 37 independent systems. But as a department consolidated its email, for instance, from Exchange and Lotus Notes and was awarded a contract through Google Apps for Government, we initiated a program to begin capturing all that email. So you're talking about 800 plus million emails a year. And I totally agree that when it comes to virtualization of that data, there's a very finite number of data that you need to present to the user externally or while they're mobile. We're also addressing that from a forms perspective. We're taking over 28,000 forms and automating those into a full HTML5 environment. So that they're where you go, you can get access to that data, and it's also available to the citizen. But again, very carefully, we're taking a look at now that we're amassing this data, we can analyze it, look at it, and more understand what do we need from the business perspective, what do we have to present to the user, what can be on long-term storage, what can be on hot storage, and what do we don't need? Do we need to keep things for 10,000 years? I'm not quite sure. There's a bona fide need for that. And so we have to understand that and work with other agencies, National Archives and OMB and our partners to better realize what we're doing and why we're doing it. And is there really a bona fide need?
All right. Well, that brings us to our next break. Our guests today are Jack Nichols, the solutions architect at CDWG, David Bray, CIO of the Federal Communications Commission, John Montell, electronic records manager in the office of the CIO at the Interior Department, Terry Halverson, CIO of the Department of the Navy, and Lee Vorthman, the Chief Technology Officer for Federal Civilian Agencies at NetApp U.S. Public Sector. I'm your moderator, Tom Temin, on the Catalyst for the Government's Big Data Revolution, a panel discussion sponsored by NetApp and CDWG here on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. We'll be right back.
What does all the buzz about big data mean for federal agencies? It means your agency can gain insight with analytics for large data sets, go fast with bandwidth that supports data-intensive workloads, and keep all your content with secure, boundless data storage. That's what you can do with an effective big data solution, but it's only from CDWG and NetApp. To learn how to turn your data challenges into data-driven insight, visit cdwg.com/netapp. That's cdwg.com/netapp.
And welcome back to our panel discussion, The Catalyst for the Government's Big Data Revolution, sponsored by NetApp and CDWG right here on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Once again, our guests today are John Montell, the electronic records manager in the office of the CIO at the Interior Department, Terry Halverson, the CIO of the Department of the Navy, David Bray, the CIO of the Federal Communications Commission, Jack Nichols, solutions architect at CDWG, and Lee Vorthman, the Chief Technology Officer for Federal Civilian Agencies at NetApp U.S. Public Sector. I'm your moderator, Tom Temin. And I guess we've talked about mobility, we've talked about applications, but it would be hard to talk about big data and the revolution in big data without talking about the other revolution, which hosts so much of this, and that is the cloud idea. And I would say that at this point in history, the cloud revolution for government is about where the data center consolidation is, maybe third gear in a six-gear system here. So, David Bray, let's start with you on cloud. Where is the FCC standing? Where do you want to head? And how are you organizing and repositioning data and virtualization to support cloud?
So cloud is central to our strategy. Actually, I would love to have the ability to say 2.5 years from now that we actually don't host anything at the FCC, that actually everything is actually commercially hosted. And that's just sort of, is again, fitting that we're a small commission. With that, to that steps, there's also to tie into virtualization. And we are literally rolling out this month and over the next 3 months, virtual desktop to all our users. And so that'll get them, and that'll help us both with virtualization so they then can go take the next steps to the cloud. And we're also looking
virtual
at
user as opposed to virtual
right.
server.
Virtual user, looking at bring your own device, actually allowing that to be used in the field, and actually the things that we can go from there. Get the virtual user, and then behind the scenes, and it doesn't really matter where we're actually storing the data that they're then hitting with that device. And so that can then allow us to make the virtualization on that side and go to cloud. The advantage, I guess, that our applications are so old, we can literally leapfrog straight to the cloud. And so all new development, the data mart that we talked about, would actually be stored in the cloud. And with that strategy, too, is the fact that the FCC, for whatever reason, has more than 95,000 different data elements for a commission of only 1,750 people. And part of that will be, and I think the comments were said earlier, is can we identify overlapping data or cases where we've called first name 207 different times, a different field or a different way of actually sort of bringing it together? I think our key strategy is recognizing the FCC that our real value is in the persistence and the permanence of our data. Applications will come and go, and particularly when we look at mobile, I mean, the average app of a mobile app is less than 5 months. And so we're looking at that things will come and go on the UI space, but we really want to make that data available as much as possible to our partners, the public, as well as ourselves.
So you're really doing four things at once here.
Have to, because our goal is actually in 18 months or less to have some of the best IT in government, and we're probably starting from 15 years behind. So it is going to be an interesting next year and a half.
That might make it easier in some sense.
Yes.
Because you can throw it all out.
It at least gives us a burning platform.
Right. And John, of course, Interior is a cloud provider in some sense to the government, but you're also a user of these services. So what's going on there?
So we have the cloud hosting foundation contract. And initially, before that, we had moved the records and information management system into that. We're looking at VTL, which is very big on our plate, to virtualize our tape libraries, get those into the cloud
first.
Virtual tape libraries. Yeah. And quickly move to geospatial as well, which is, as you know, USGS, for instance, produces over 50,000 maps, and getting those off and getting them into the cloud and sharing that data and opening that up to our partners is large on our list. But there are many facets to that. There are also other applications that are in our strategic plan, but we have to look at those very carefully. I think going back to some of our initial comments on what do we need to put out in the cloud and what's the bona fide need for that, and how do we share that with the public and with our partners inside the Department of the Interior is something that we're doing on a case-by-case basis. So I think it's a long-term strategy, but one that we're pushing as hard as we can with all the challenges ahead of us. And a lot of pieces around that also go to change management and trying to understand, you know, what are the changes that need to take place, not only policy, planning, and management of those applications to the cloud.
I want to focus on maps for just a moment because partly because almost every application these days seems to have a geospatial element. And so everybody's using maps in one form or another. But do you virtualize all this map data before you cloudify it?
I'm not quite sure you need to anymore. I think that most of these things are available, you know, on the internet or open source. The question is, what data do you need to allocate that? So if I have coordinates, for instance, that I can simply go out to a Google Maps or a Google site or a mapping site that's out on the public sector through my cloud, then I don't need to represent that inside my environment and pay for that storage or virtualize that environment to my end users. And so trying to understand what that need is and how do you project that in the fastest way possible to your employees is something that we're working on right now.
All right, Lee, I wanted to ask you, is there, from your view, a kind of standard best practice order of events in order to get data optimized? I think, you know, the idea of maybe silo, then virtual, then cloud. I mean, what is the best way to do that? And does it, can it apply regardless of the legacy situation that an agency might have?
Yeah, I think it can. You know, there's certainly some things to consider, right? Is that, you know, we've heard from, you know, from David, and he has a lot of legacy apps. And traditionally, when you have legacy apps, it's actually usually very difficult to move those to the cloud because the older legacy applications might not be supported or might not function very well in that type of shared environment. But you know, there is a natural, I think, logical progression as you start talking about modernizing your IT infrastructure, where you know the first thing you look at for cost savings or just economic efficiencies is, okay, let's virtualize a bunch of this stuff and take advantage of these compute pools. And then once you get there, you realize these shared, you know, savings effect, and then you say, well, what can we do with this? And as David mentioned in the beginning, right, you start shifting towards becoming an IT broker, whether internally or externally, and that kind of naturally leads itself to, okay, what can we now move into the cloud, whether it's public or hybrid, you know, or private, if you will. And so I think that that trend is just, it's just a maturity of the organization as they look to modernize. And that's something that we've certainly been looking at as well. There is one thing I'd like to highlight on, which is something that Terry mentioned, which is something that John mentioned, which is issues with moving to the cloud, right? So as you look at what you can actually move into the cloud, whether the applications or the data, there are some issues, right? So you have security issues. Clearly, you know, who's going to access that data, because now it is more prolific out there.
Everybody nodding their heads on that one.
Yeah, so certainly security is a big one. The other thing which is closely tied to security is control, right? So if you're talking about moving to a public cloud provider and you're looking at putting your mission critical data or your mission critical application into the cloud, you may actually be giving up control of your data, right? You no longer control the disaster recovery, the replication, the backup cycles. And so something we've been working very closely with our customers is, how can you maintain control of your data while still taking advantage of the economic efficiencies of the cloud? And then the last thing I'd like to highlight with issues with the cloud, which is something our customers need to consider, is what's the cost of change, right? So if you're looking, if we think back to that progression of the siloed to virtualized to the cloud, what's the cost of actually modernizing that legacy application and putting it into the cloud? And then what's the cost if you choose that cloud is no longer economic? What's the cost of getting that data out, right? There's costs with change associated with it. And it's important that you consider that as part of the overall cost of the solution.
And I guess in the cloud, you have to make sure you get all of it out if you switch, and all of the instances of it.
Yeah. That's certainly one thing you need to consider. The other thing we're seeing becoming a trend as our customers look to move to the cloud is kind of hedging their bets, if you will. So they look at what's the best way to, you know, as Terry said, we want our data to be portable. We want to think of the uses of our data. So how can we make sure that our data could be very, very portable in terms of, let's say one day Amazon is a better price, and then the next day, Azure or something else is a better price. How can we take advantage of those economic, you know, cost changes while still having our data in the cloud? And that's a big issue going on right now.
Does it matter what the architecture or composition of the cloud is? I mean, we keep using the word cloud, but let's consider a cloud somebody else's data center.
Yeah.
And so if you were talking about your own data centers and optimizing them in a way to have the right storage tiers and so forth to serve up data fast, but yet cheaply store the unused or not so often used data, how do you get that same architecture and response from a cloud, which could have a completely different makeup than what you have locally?
Yeah, so I think you'll see what's emerging is, you know, for example, you have Amazon S3, you have Glacier, you have Microsoft Azure, right? These all have different technologies. Some are object-oriented, some are designed to be very, very long-term and cheap archives, and some are, you know, some are designed to give you more performance, right? So I think what you'll find is the underlying infrastructure is probably the same, but there's technological nuances which has given those providers stickiness, if you will, right? They're providing a service and they've tried to decide the best way to provide that service. And so those kind of different nuances are what make it, you have to consider, what is my format, is my data being stored, and how am I going to best serve this up? And there can be tremendous differences between those.
All right, and Terry Halverson, you're nodding your head at that. It looks like you've looked into that whole idea of what actually are you getting from a cloud provider, regardless of the brand.
Yeah, so I think the first thing that somebody made a good point on, we spend a lot of times, I think, sometimes saying, you know, technologically, what can you put in the cloud? Wrong question. What should you put in the cloud is a much better question to ask.
Can you put everything if you want.
You could, but it may not be. And what versions of the cloud? I mean, I don't particularly like the word cloud, and cloud's just another form of a distributed data storage system. I think you're going to see more hybrid sets of answers. We will certainly, from the dawn, use more hybrid sets of answers. That gets to the other point. Security, obviously, for the Department of Navy, Department of Defense, security is a higher priority for much of our data. We're not going to put completely mission-critical data in a cloud where I don't have the control of the data. We're just not going to do that. So we'll look at the different hybrids of clouds, and we talked about that in segment one. Same with our data centers. We'll have everything from a cloud that we own that's probably operated internal to the government, in our case probably DISA. We will use some of that, to where we actually do put. I mean, we were one of the first big agencies to go to the Amazon public cloud. We have a contract with them. It's public-facing data. It is not mission-critical data. It's data that, you know, we want the public to see. We're working hard right now with DISA, DOD CIO, to get, in FedRAM terms, level 3 to 5, that sensitive but not classified data. We're working to get that approved for cloud storage using a commercial vendor. That will get into where we do private clouds, semi-private clouds, you know, almost private clouds. Pick your option there. While cloud has the potential to improve your security posture, as has been pointed out, it also has the potential to make increase your security problems. And I think that's the other area we have to spend some time in, because the cloud technologies are a little newer. What are the understanding about the security environment? I mean, in a simple sense, you could say once you got into cloud, if it's not configured right, your data is more exposed. There's all kinds of ways to configure it so that doesn't happen. That drives cost. It can drive some access time. And the other thing that we can't forget within the Department of Navy, because of our size, there's a bandwidth issue here too. I mean, one of the reasons that we will use more traditional solutions and park our data closer is then I'm not having to go out and use commercial or long-haul bandwidth. And we're running the amount of volume of data that we run. I run very close in many cases to the maximum pieces that my bandwidth can handle. I'm running at saturation points in some places. Mm-hmm. So I also have the problem of how do I take some of this out of the cloud, off the big long-haul circuits, and keep it more locally focused. That, in some cases, to us, in the overall picture, that's a better performance, better cost factor.
So you only move changes, for example, and keep
I just put in a place where it's right next to the user. I don't need long-haul bandwidth. And for me, that becomes a mission-critical factor and can actually reduce my overall cost. So I think the other thing, anybody who's managing, and everybody here is, a complex environment, you're really going to end up using many of varieties of all this. I hear a lot of people talk, you know, well, you got to go to this one, you know, one set of answers. No, it's going to be multiple answers, and some of them aren't going to be always the most modern answer or even close to the most modern answer. There's sometimes when what we're doing today is older, maybe 20 years, but it works. I mean, good classic example from the warfare side. We're still flying the B-52, and it meets mission requirements. We now have third-generation people flying the B-52. That's okay. If it works, and it works from both a mission, security, and economic standpoint, then you don't need to change it.
All right. And switching to a small agency, FCC, David, one of the, I guess, characteristics of data that the FCC has is there's a lot of information on private parties, private entities, carriers, this whole issue of the spectrum. And so you've got a lot of proprietary information that so you have an extra security need there, too. What is your strategy for that set of big data versus operational for the agency type of information?
Right. So we're looking at, for all our data, how can we bake in both security and privacy protections at the code level? So when we are actually updating our applications, one example, the FCC speed test app. The FCC speed test app actually doesn't even collect your IP address. It doesn't even know who you are within a 5-mile radius. And so that actually bakes in privacy and security protections at that level, because if the data is ever compromised, there's still no way that the data could actually reveal anything. For more proprietary information that we may be collecting from partners and things like that that's sensitive, making sure that we define how the application should handle the data. And if we can define how the application should handle the data, then we also know how it shouldn't. And so that should trigger out alerts. And so one of the things we're looking at is actually how can we combine what was our network operations center with our network security operations center, because the reality is nowadays when a server reboots, that could just be the server rebooted, hardware problem, or it could be that that's now a sign of a security issue. Same thing with applications. They should actually be able to send us alerts if something that's unexpected is happening to them, so that we can have a greater degree of confidence that we're actually protecting privacy and security on the data that we're handling.
And Jack, is it possible to, in effect, virtualize the security services needed for all of this data, especially the big data, in a way that you can also reassure the public that data is being handled properly with respect to privacy and so forth?
Yeah, I think security is paramount in all these discussions, really. So it's one of the first things mentioned in almost every conversation that we have. So it's the elephant in the room, certainly, you know, to Mr. Halverson's point about, you know, what should you move to the cloud. Security is at the forefront of that. So that's, doing those kinds of assessments, whether it's public-facing information, things of, you know, low risk that makes perfect sense to host in a commercial cloud type setting, or, you know, more sensitive data, maybe not at the classified level, but personally identifiable information, all those kinds of things. All those things need to be assessed and looked at. And, you know, in terms of what the application, the data behind the application, the security parameters for that, and whether or not a cloud service provider can meet those needs.
All right. We have so much more to discuss, but I'm afraid we're out of time. I want to thank today's guests, Terry Halverson, CIO of the Navy Department, John Montell, Electronics Records Manager in the Office of the CIO at the Interior Department, David Bray, CIO of the FCC, Jack Nichols, Solutions Architect at CDWG, and Lee Vorthman, the Chief Technology Officer for Federal Civilian Agencies at NetApp U.S. Public Sector. I'm Tom Temin, federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Thank you for listening to Catalyst for Government's Big Data Revolution panel, sponsored by NetApp and CDWG on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any portion of this show, you can listen to it in its entirety and on demand at federalnewsradio.com. What does all the buzz about big data mean for federal agencies? It means your agency can gain insight with analytics for large data sets, go fast with bandwidth that supports data-intensive workloads, and keep all your content with secure, boundless data storage. That's what you can do with an effective big data solution, but it's only from CDWG and NetApp. To learn how to turn your data challenges into data-driven insight, visit cdwg.com/netapp. That's cdwg.com/netapp.